And we're about to start Daf Hey of an Aleph. So here on the bottom of Daf Dalet Amid Beis, the Gemara postulates that the Iser of Chametz applies on the 14th of Nisan. And the Gemara wants to know, how do we derive such a conclusion? After all, the Torah says, Shivas Yomim, 7 days, Si'or lo yimotzei bibatechem. There should be no Sa'ar in your possession. 7 days would seem to imply that the Iser is only for 7 days. And now all of a sudden we're saying that Bein Rabbi Meir, Bein Rabbi Yehuda, as we discussed at great length yesterday, everybody agrees that Chametz is Asur in the middle of the day on the 14th. How do we know such a thing? And that's going to be the sugya called Minon. So if you're on Daf Dalet on the days and you're counting up from the bottom of the Daf, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 lines up. Correct? Minon. And the sugya opens with Abai. Now before we go through this sugya, I just wanted to add one last point to the Ramban. So if you happen to have the photocopy of the Ramban, we got up to the words Elokach Ani Omer, and this would be just about parallel to the first line in Masechta Pesachim, just on the left column. Elokach Ani Omer. So just to summarize, the Ramban has raised a number of objections to Rashi's understanding that there's something called Hashbasa B'Lev. The Ramban has asked, you know, a bomb of a whole slew of questions against Tosfos Rabbeinu Tam, who identifies Bittul as Hefker. And if we reject Rashi of Hashbasa B'Lev and we reject Rabbeinu Tam of Hefker, then we're left sort of in no man's land. You know, we still don't understand what is Bittul and how Bittul operates. And here's where the Ramban drops a bomb, a real revolution, how Bittul operates. And he says, Shabittul Moil Lahotzio Mitoras Chametz. So those are the words you want to underline. These are perhaps, if not the most famous words of any Rishon in Masechta Pesachim, then it's up there amongst the on the top of the list. There's something called Lehotzio Mitoras Chametz. And in the world of Brisket Torah, they call it Mishem Chametz. You know, Shem means a halachic category or status. So there's something called Chametz. And you can talk about Chametz on one level in biological terms, meaning it's fermentation of some sort. But that's not enough, because there's something called halachic chametz, which has nothing to do with physiological chametz. Obviously, it's biologically, it's chametz. You know, the metzius is that it's chametz. But that itself is not enough. You have to have another condition. There's a certain gap here that has to be traversed. And that gap is between the physical chametz as reality and the halachic chametz as a legal category which the halacha recognizes. And in the gap between those two, you can wedge in what's called bittul. What bittul accomplishes is it prevents chametz from becoming chametz. What does that mean? I don't mean we're arresting the process of fermentation. It's fully fermented. It's real chametz. It's a great, you know, tasty piece of pastry, but it's not chametz. Why? Because you made bittul. And the Ramban postulates this magical concept called bittul that removes the shame chametz. And machshivo ka'ofar. You could make this verbal declaration, and the power of your words is such that the halacha now views this chametz not as chametz, but as ofar, as if it was the dust on the earth. V'eino roi l'achila. Now, what do you mean it's ain aroy lachila? You know, if you taste it, believe me, you'll have to make a hamotzi lechem in aretz and berkas hamazon. It's roy lachila, but it's as if it's not roy lachila because it's considered offar. Offar is like your classical example of something that's not edible. You know, the dust or the dirt on the ground. Now, what is the basis for such a thing? How can you tell me that something is chametz and yet it's not chametz? It's chametz and it's edible, but it's not edible. It's chametz, but it doesn't have a Torah's chametz because you declared it batel and you made it into offer. There's got to be some basis for such a radical conclusion. The Gemara says, b'doraisa b'bitel b'almasagi. The Torah says all you have to do to avoid b'al yiro b'al yimotzi is bitel. And now you're telling me that bitel removes the Torah's chametz. Where does that come from? Says the Ramban, v'heter ze midivrei Rabbi Yishmael hu. Now this Rabbi Yishmael is going to show up on Daf Vav Amid Beis. Just one second. Okay, actually, we don't have it in the name of Rabbi Yishmael. We have it in the name of Rabbi Elazar. I guess there were two different Girsos. So if you take a quick peek on Daf Vav Amid Beis and you count up five lines before the end of the Daf, you'll see the Omer Abu Lazar. And apparently the Ramban had Omer Abu Yishmael. And that statement is very famous. He says, Shnei Dvarim Eino Bershuso Shel Adam. There are two categories of objects that don't really belong to you. But the Torah considered it as if it were yours. It's a kind of legal fiction, if you will. You know, it's an ownership which does not comply with the universal requires of ownership. The conditions have not been met. And yet, it's yours. Why? Because the Torah considered it as if it's yours. But let's go through the two categories. The first category is very, very understandable, very simple. Eluhain, number one is Bar B'Shus Arabin. I dig a ditch in the middle of a public domain. Well, what? How do you translate the word bar? I called it a ditch, but I don't know. In every language, it's a little different. A pit? Okay, a pit. So you dug a pit in the middle of a public domain, and now somebody fell in, and he broke a leg. So he sues you for nezikin, for compensation for damages. And the law is that you have to pay. Now normally, in all other categories of what's called nizkei mamon, which means that my object caused you a damage, let's say for example, I own an ox, and by virtue of the fact that it's mine, I'm responsible for the ox, and if the ox gores you, or gores your ox, then I have to pay damages for that. But in the case of a bar, do I own this bar? Obviously not. Where did I dig the pit? In Rishus HaRab, I have no ownership rights over Rishus HaRab. But the Torah puts it into your Rishus. The Torah considers it as if it's yours. That's category number one. So you become responsible under the laws of Niske Mamono in the case of a Bar Rishus HaRab. That's understood. Now here's the next case. V'chametz Mishesh Shos Ulamala. Now, Rabosa, I'm going to assume here, so we don't get too complicated here. I'm going to assume, like Rabbeinu Tam, that the word sheish shos ulamala means sof sheish shos. Because you know, we don't want to get into the whole sugi of derabanan. So you remember that the hour between 11 and 12 is only derabanan. So let's assume it's at the end of the sixth hour, which is the beginning of the seventh hour, which is 12 noon. So the Torah at that point says that if you possess chametz, then you violate Bal Yirah, Bal Yimotzei. And here, apparently, and we'll see this in the Ramban in just a minute, you don't really own that chametz. And we're going to have to answer the question, why? Why is it not yours? But the Torah is going to say, through this legal fiction, it's as if it were yours. And why isn't it yours? The clock strikes noon, and it's not yours. What happened when the clock struck noon? So that, Rabosa, is called Isuri Hanor. You familiar with that? Sometimes the Torah says you're not allowed to benefit from something. If the Torah says you're not allowed to benefit from something, then it's not yours. it's not yours. So for example, let's say a man wants to be Makadish a woman by giving her a Shava Pruta, and he has to give something that's his, and he gave her Isuri Anah. Let's say he gave a Basu B'chola of a Klaya Kerem, or he gave a Chametz B'Pesach. In all those cases, the Kiddusha would not be valid. Why? Because he doesn't own Isuri Anah. This is based on a sugya in Masechta Baba Kama Daf Mem Hei called Shar HaNiskal. That Shar HaNiskal, even before it dies, is considered Isuri HaNoah. You can't benefit from the ox once there's a Gemar Din that the Shar has to be stoned because it killed a person or whatever the case may be. And the Gemara says that if you try to sell a Shar HaNiskal, the sale is invalid because it's not yours. Why isn't it yours? I own the Shar, I bought it with my own money, but the answer is it's also by no. The moment that Beis Din ruled that it is skila, it's chayav skila, that it should be stoned, at that moment it becomes also by no, you can't benefit from it, and anything that you can't benefit from it is not yours. Chametz, therefore, is not yours. And yet the Torah says that you're in violation of Bal Yirah Bayimotzei for owning chametz. How could that be? And the answer is, in the same way that we said by digging a pit in a public domain, you're chayav as if the pit was yours, the Torah makes it into yours. Here too, in the case of chametz, the Torah makes it into yours. Let's go back to the Ramban. The Ramban says, v'hetizem yidivri Rabbi Yishmael hu diyom shnei dvar meinim bershusa shal adam v'yason akosav ki'ilein bershuso lomar dekevon shalo akpida Torah Ella shalo yehei chametz shalo birshuso v'isuri hanoa eno mamon v'lo karinim be'lecha. He says the following, that if not for the fact that the Torah created a big chiddush, something very new of Bal Yirah Bayimotzei, if not for that, we would have assumed that, you know, the chametz, insofar as it's Isurei Anah, is Eino Mamon. Eino Mamon means you have no ownership rights over something that's Osur Banah. You're not allowed to have any benefits from it. Right? The essence of ownership is I can benefit from something. Here the Torah enjoins me from benefiting from it. And therefore it's not considered Lacha. And I don't have ownership over it. But and Bidinhu, according to all the strict rules of logic, lo yavar olav b'klum, he should not violate any law of Bal Yirah Bayimotzei, because the Torah is saying don't own chametz. I don't own chametz. It's also ranah. Ella, but rather haTorah asa also ki ilu hu bershuso. The Torah, in a kind of a legal fiction, considers it as if it's yours, just like in the case of Bar Bershus HaRavim. Lavar Olav Bebeis Lavim. So that he'll violate two different Lavim. That's called Bal Yirah and Bal Yimotzei. But the Torah added one condition. When are you considered the owner of this Chametz? When do you violate Bal Yirah Bayimotzei? Mipnei Shedaito Olav. The who rotze b'kiyumo, because he's thinking about this chametz and he wants it to exist, and therefore the Torah says the following: if you make a declaration that you don't want the chametz, that you don't have das on this chametz, you're not interested in the chametz, you don't want it to exist, but rather you declare that it's like the dust of the earth, is lefichach, therefore, zeshe eskima daito ledas Torah, this person who made bittul, and he agreed to what the Torah, exactly what the Torah wanted of him, yotzo levatlo shaloye bo din mamon, he decided that he doesn't want it to be considered like mamon, el shei mutza mershusa legamre, it should be completely excluded from his domain, yeshuv eino over all of, it's not a violation of Bal Yirah Bayimotzei, though Karinin Bay, we don't consider it Lecha. Again, this fictitious Lecha that the Torah imposed upon you as if it were yours, even though technically it's not yours, that's only if you want it to exist, if you want it to be yours. But since he decided, I agree with the Torah, I don't want this to exist, I don't want it to be mine, therefore the Torah says it's not called Lecha. Under those circumstances, we're not putting it back into your Rishus, and you don't have ownership over it. Kevanchu asur, he doesn't want to violate any surim, so therefore he makes a declaration. Eino rotza b'kiyuma, I don't want this chametz to exist. I wish it wasn't in existence. It's like the dust of the earth. And according to the Ramban, that's considered to remove the Torah's chametz. In other words, the Torah's chametz here is what the Torah makes it into yours when it's not really yours, and the Torah says, I'm going to make it into yours because you want it to exist. If you don't want it to exist, then it's not considered yours. There's another piece here about Rabbi Yossi. I believe we'll leave that for another time. That requires a whole other analysis. So let's just summarize three approaches to Bittul. Rashi holds that Bittul is some sort of hashbasa belev, some sort of destruction through my heart, that if I consider it batel, it's as if I destroyed it. How do we know that the Torah doesn't require physical destruction, but rather validates hashbasa belev, says Rashi, because the Torah chose the word Tashbisu instead of Tevaru. Then we have Rabbi Netam, who identifies Bittul as Hefker. And finally we have the Ramban, who says that Bittul is removing Lahotzi Toras Chametz, which means that it's not considered mine, it's not Mamon, because I agree to the Torah's will that I don't want it to exist, I don't want it to be mine. The Torah only puts it back into my Rishus and makes it like it's mine only if I want it to be mine. So it's almost as if I have to give my tacit approval to the Torah putting it back into my Rishus, and if I refuse to accept the Torah and I don't want to accept the ownership, excuse me, but I want rather to comply with the will of God that I shouldn't own this chametz. I wish it didn't exist. In my eyes, it's like what? The dust of the earth. In those cases, the Torah says it's not yours. We go back to square one, which legally it's not yours, because Isuri Ano Ein Ba Din Mamon. If something is prohibited and you're not allowed to have any benefit of it, it's not yours. The Torah made it into yours, but only if you want it to exist. If you declare you don't want it to exist, the Torah doesn't make it into yours. Questions?
The Rambam is forced to say all this because he doesn't believe that if it's Hefker, then you've got a problem with Lechav.
Right. Hefker doesn't solve your problem of Lechav.
Yeah, but he's forced into this whole legal fiction. But he says that the Torah says that. Is that
correct? This? And he's basing it on Rabbi Shmuel. Meaning,
well, the Torah doesn't say that. It's just that Rabbi Shmuel says that.
Right.
His interpretation.
But he's basing it on Rabbi Shmuel because, you know, all we have in the Gemara is that Midaraisa Bittul Baal Masagi. And Rashi says Bittul Baal Masagi is based on a diuk in the pasuk where the Torah chose the word Tashbisu in place of a more normal, appropriate word, which is Tevaru. Rabbi Tam says that bitul baal masagi means that the Gemara is just activating a universal principle of hefker. It's not mine if I made it hefker. The Ramban says there's so many conditions that have to be met to make something hefker. You can't just say it's batel. You know, I don't consider it as, I consider it like the dust of the earth, and therefore it's hefker. That doesn't make any sense. Nowhere do you find the word hefker in Shas with regard to bitul chametz. And then the Ramban goes back to this statement of Rabbi Shmuel that the whole enterprise of Bal Yerobai Matzi is problematic. Why, how can I violate Bal Yerobai Matzi? Meaning, the Torah says, Lecha, you're not allowed to own chametz. I don't own chametz. So Rabbi Shmuel says, I don't own a pit that I dug in Rishus HaRabim. But there are two cases, says Rabbi Shmuel, in which the Torah considers it yours. It's as if the Torah made it into yours. That's what I call a legal fiction. Says the Ramban, there are conditions. When does the Torah make it into yours? When you are Rotzev Akumo, you want it to exist. But if you make a declaration you don't want it to exist, the Torah doesn't make it into yours. It's a pretty phenomenal idea. So again, you have something that's physically chametz and Hotzio Mitoras chametz. I have a right to look at this beautiful piece of pastry and say it's not chametz. How so? And that's Ramban's radical chiddush here, that I could be motzi es hachametz mitoras chametz, simply by declaring that I don't want it to exist. In my eyes, it's like the dust of the earth, and it loses its shame chametz, and I don't have ownership over it. Now, you know,
does that relate only to virtual ownership at Shas Yisrael, or would that apply even earlier when it really is yours?
Yeah, bless you. According to the Ramban, if I declare bittul before Shas Yisuro, the bittul is an ongoing bittul, meaning I don't have to actually, you know, repeat it like a parakeet, like a parrot, but halachically, that bittul is upständig, as we say in Yiddish. In other words, it continues. It has a life of its own. So from the moment I made bittul until finally we get to the Shas Yisuro, that bittul is kind of re-energizing itself. And at the moment that it becomes asur, at that moment, the bittul now is chal.
But if I would take your chal, let's say you were mavatul an hour before Shas Yisuro, and I would come and take that chametz, and my chayv on gezel, is that really bittul for you, or is the bittul not right. Chal until
the bittul is suspended until Shas Yisuro? Because according to Ramban, it's only after the chametz is removed from my rishus that bittul is
right. So why don't we make bittul?
Now we're just one more point here. But let's say if we go to Rabbeinu Tam, this would be an interesting nafkamina between the Ramban and Rabbeinu Tam. If at 11 a.m. you decide to make bittul, according to Rabbeinu Tam, if I would then confiscate your chametz, you'd give me a yashar koyach.
Of course.
He would say thanks, because now the hefker completes itself, and you've saved me, spared me from Balyar Rabbi Matzah. There would be no gzela. But according to Ramban, that bittul is just of course shame chametz, then that is only meaningful at the point of Shas Yisuro, and there's no hefker going on over here, and if somebody takes my chametz, then he's in violation of gezel.
Of course, what are they going to do with it?
No, I was going to say, but it doesn't work, does it? I was going to say, why did you do the bittul then after the sick cow? The answer is presumably because from midday you'll be over the line.
Yeah, and here, Michael, the Torah is saying to you the following. At one particular moment in time, I'm taking this chametz out of your rishus and I'm putting it back into your rishus. That moment, you have the alternative. You have to make a decision. Do you want the chametz or you do not want the chametz? If at that moment you don't declare that you don't want the chametz, or as Abby said before, maybe you should declare it even beforehand to make sure you cover your bases. But if you haven't done bittul, it's going to be too late. Because then the Torah says it's yours. And it's interesting, you're guilty until proven innocent. In other words, the assumption is that it's rotza b'kiyumo until he makes the declaration, ain't a rotza b'kiyumo. Until he declares that it's like offer, it's considered rotza b'kiyumo. All right, let's get to Abaye, because I stalled long enough. No, yeah, if you get to know my style, I mean, this is a real... The truth is, the first half of the sugya is okay, but when we get to Daf Hey, it really gets picky. Okay. But we'll try the best that we will take a best shot, as they say in basketball. Okay. Omar Abaye. Trey Kroik Sive. There's an apparent contradiction between two psukim, and the only way of reconciling that is by introducing Yudalit. Again, all of the alfusas that we're going to have, and there are going to be many of them, are all to try to prove that already on Yudalit, on the 14th of Nisan, the Torah prohibits chametz. One pasuk siv, shivas yomim si'ar lo yimotze bibatechem. Now I'm going to interpret the kash of Abaye here according to Rashi. You'll see that Tosus has a different approach, but according to Rashi, what it means is that all of the seventh of these 7 days in their totality prohibit you from having chametz in your possession. So if you take a look at Rashi, 5 lines up from the bottom of the page, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines up, you'll just underline the words afilu shah achas. Do you see those 3 words? Underline those words, because that's the key to understand Rashi. Rashi says that Abaye understood that shivas yomim siolo limotzi v'teich means any little piece of time within that framework of shivas yomim, you violate bal yimotzi. Okay, so what would be Rabosai if I were to destroy my chametz on the morning of the 15th?
Too late.
I would have already violated Shivas Yomim. And that's the stereo, which means that you destroy the chametz on the first day. Now let's assume the first day is 1 hour into the day, you know, the nighttime, or maybe it means after daybreak the next morning on the 15th, or whatever it is. At the beginning of Yom HaRishon, which is the first of the 7 days, the chametz is in his possession until he gets a chance to destroy it. Hakeitzad, so how do we reconcile this? You know, the Torah can't say one thing and then deny it. The Torah can't say, well, you cannot have any chametz in your possession from the Shah Achas, from the first hour of the 7th day, and then turn around and say, we'll destroy it on the 7th day, meaning on the first day of Yom. And the answer is that what does the Yom HaRishon mean? L'rabos arbos ar l'bir. That the Torah with this Yom Rishon is telling you a chiddush, that even on the 14th, not the first day of Pesach, but on Erev Pesach, you have to destroy your chametz. So Gemara's not happy with this. The Ema, perhaps I need the pasuk b'yom harishon l'rabos lele chamisha sol l'bir, meaning maybe b'yom harishon means the night going into the 15th, correct? And at that point the Torah says, get rid of your chametz. The Salka died. I mean, if the Torah hadn't said that, I would have said, since it says Shivas Yomim Lo Yimotziv Atechem, the word Yomim should be emphasized. Ksiv Yomim, Yomim in Leilos Lo. The Torah is only prohibiting you from having it during the daytime. And I think we've touched on this discussion in the past, maybe not here, but elsewhere. You know, sometimes the word Yom means the entire 24-hour period. Sometimes the word Yom means the 12 hours of daylight. Here in this case, the Gemara thinks, at least as the Havamina, that the word Yom, or in this case, Yomim in the plural, Shivas Yomim, Yom means Yom v'lo Laila, Yomim in Laila Slo. Now I'm a little bit perplexed here about the word Lelos, because Lelos is what? Is plural or singular? It's plural. I don't know what the Gemara means. Is Gemara saying in the Havamina that every night of Pesach, this is like, if you pardon the expression, Ramadan, you know, for the Arabs, you know, they for 40 days they're fasting, but they fast only during the day and not at night. Right? No one could survive 40 days of fasting, except for Moshe Rabbeinu on Har Sinai. Right? So here also, maybe the Torah is saying that I'm not allowed to have chametz in my possession during the daylight. So I'm wondering, what would happen if every single night of Pesach I would go out and have a beer party, you know, and drink chametz? You know, is that what we say? I don't know. I'm not sure about the word lelos here. But let's take the minimalist interpretation of the Gemara. Certainly the first Lila of Pesach, before the kickoff of the Shivas Yomim, because Yomim means day and not night, you'd be allowed to have possession over chametz. It's kamashma, therefore the Torah had to add this command, this mandate of Ach Bayom HaRishon, to be marba filu lelos, even nighttime. So again, what the Gemara's kash is predicated on the assumption that maybe the word Yomim in Shivas Yom means day and not night, and therefore I need Ach Bayom HaRishon to teach me that even at night you're not allowed to have chametz, you have to destroy your chametz. So Gemara says, name, Hahu lo itzrichle. I don't need any sort of apostle to teach me that night going into the 15th, that night is also included in the Easter. And here we're turning to Daf, Hey Amid Aleph, Daha Iskash. Okay, now this is what you call a triple header, meaning the Gemara is going to have an equation here between A, B, and C. Okay, it's like a double hekesh. Iskash hashbosas cr lachilas chametz. We have an equation in the pasuk between hashbosas cr, meaning the prohibition against keeping your chametz in your possession, and the iser of eating chametz. We'll see the psukim in just a minute. And then we have another equation between achilas chametz and achilas matzah. And we know that achilas matzah is at the night of the 15th. So therefore, since A equals B and B equals C, therefore A equals C, the law of transmutation.
Transitive property.
So it means that the same nighttime that generates achilas matzah, will also generate an iser of shehiyas chametz, meaning you're not allowed to have possession over chametz. Now the Gemara goes through the psukim. Hashbos asir, where does the Torah say you're not allowed to have chametz in your possession? And in the same pasuk is going to tell you that you're not allowed to eat chametz. The Torah says, Shivas Yomim, this is in Shmos Perek Yud Beis, I believe. It says, Shivas Yomim, si'or lo yimotze bevatechem. And then it tells you the punishment for the severe violation of achilas chametz. You call it ocha machmetzes v'michrisa. Now it's interesting. If I were the Tosis at the beginning of a Masechta Pesachim, you know, who says get rid of your chametz because otherwise you might come to eat the chametz, the simple pshat in this pasuk and the relationship between the reisha of the pasuk and the seif would be the following. You know why you shouldn't have chametz in your possession? Because if you eat the chametz, then you're going to violate an iser kares. But in any event, we have here a hekesh between the iser of what's called shehiyas chametz bebeso, meaning maintaining the chametz and ownership over the chametz, and the iser of achilas chametz. Now we have another hekesh. Achilas chametz, lachilas matzah. Dichsiv, it says in the pasuk Machmetzes, lo sochelu. So the Reish of the Pasuk tells you about the Isur Chametz, and the Sefer of the Pasuk commands you in the mitzvah of eating matzah. Now, when is the mitzvah of eating matzah? Ksiv be, with regard to the mitzvah of matzah, it says be'erev tochlu matzahs. So therefore, if we're going to derive a hekesh here, and we're going to equate, let's say we'll go up the ladder backwards, if you follow what I mean. So we'll derive matzah, Lila and Matzah, and we'll attach that over to Achilas Chametz, and then from Achilas Chametz we're going to go back up to Hashbos HaSior, and therefore we're going to know that there is a prohibition of Shiyas Chametz Belila, and therefore there's no need for the Pasuk Ach B'Yom HaRishon. So don't tell me that the Ach B'Yom HaRishon is establishing an Iser of Shiyas Chametz on Erev Pesach on the 14th, right? And that doesn't make any sense, because I don't no, let me go over one more time. So the Gemara is saying, now how do you know, Abaye, that the just one second, Abaye, let me go over this one more time, that the reason why the Torah says Ach Bayom HaRishon, so Abaye says you're not allowed to possess chametz for 7 days. So how can the Torah say Biyom HaRishon you destroy it? It means that you're holding on to the chametz as you enter into the seventh day. It must be, it's referring to the day before the seventh day, meaning the 14th of Nisan. So Mar says, no, maybe Abaye, I can put a hole in your balloon and say that the reason why I need Ach Biyom HaRishon is to include Leil Tesvav, because Yomim means Yom V'lo Leil. He says, no, I basically, on the Hekesh, I already know that Yomim includes Leilos as well. And if I know that Yomim includes Leilos as well, I don't need the Pasuk Ach B'Yom HaRishon to teach me Laila. And therefore, Abai is right, that the Ach B'Yom HaRishon must be referring to Erev Pesach. The Emor says the Gemara, oh, okay, now Ach B'Yom HaRishon refers to the 14th, is maybe the Emor, perhaps, L'Rabos Lele Yudalid L'Biur, maybe we'll take the 14th as an indivisible unit of day and night that starts with the night, and already on the night going into the 14th, the Torah is telling me I'm not allowed to have chametz in my possession. And if that be the case, according to your logic, Abaye, maybe at the very beginning of the 14th of Nisan, i.e. the Lila going into the 14th, I already have to destroy my chametz. That we're not going to say. Nobody says you have to destroy your chametz already going into the night of the 14th. So the answer is by Yom Ksiv. The Torah says, Ach Bayom HaRishon, on the daytime of the 14th. Right, we've already determined that the word Rishon refers to the 14th. Now we're going to read the pasuk Biyom HaRishon on the day of the 14th. So the Gemara says V'yema mitzafra, but maybe with daybreak in the morning, I would already have to destroy my chametz. And the Gemara answers Ach Chilek. This is the famous principle which I mentioned in the past called Ach Chilek. The Torah adds the extra word Ach Biyom HaRishon. Ach is a division. Rashi says that the word Ach in Gematria is the same as Chetz. Chetz means Chetzio, means split it in half. We take the daylight hours of Yudalid Benisa and we split them in half. And then we get the morning, which is Mutter, and the afternoon from the middle and on, which is Asur. It's interesting here that Rashi quotes a sugya in Sanhedrin. Just one second. I'm sorry, it's a sugya Masechet Shabbos. The 12th Perek of Shabbos is called Perek HaBoneh. And even though it's called Perek HaBoneh, and the first half of that Perek is about Melechus Binyan, but the bulk of that pasuk is about Ksiva, right? And in that Perek about Ksiva, the Gemara has many, many different insights into Osios and how to interpret Osios. And what the Aleph stands for, what the Bay stands for, very, very interesting Gemara. If you ever get a chance to learn it, it's a fascinating Gemara. So in that Gemara, the Gemara has a very unique gematria, which is in the long formulation is called Achas Bata Gif Dekatz. And basically what you do is you set up columns of the 22 letters of the alphabet, and you make a relationship between the bottom letter of one column and the top letter of the other column. And that's how you're able to produce from the word ach, you could produce the word chetz. That's a sugya mesech to Shabbos. So Rashi, first the first part of Rashi, ach chilek, he gives you the simple pshat. And that's based on the Gemara in Sanhedrin, that ach, achin v'rachim mi'utin. That whenever you see the word ach, it's considered a miut. A miut. And what that means is take the yom and cut off a segment of the yom as far as the Isur Chametz is concerned. Miktas hayom mutar, miktas asur. In other words, if the Torah is excluding part of the day, we assume that it means half of the day. Now, again, I don't know why. Maybe you could assume it's 1 hour of the day. I don't know. But Ika the Omer, he says, there's another Lishna that says, Achu chetz begematria, based on this Gemara in Perek Abona. Tofes heches b'mokom aleph, right? Because if you set this column down, and the last letter, right, the last letter is Zion, and then the first letter of the second column is Biches, and the Ches now corresponds to the Aleph. So what you have is Ach becomes a, the Aleph becomes a Ches, so that's called Ches Tachas Aleph. Vitzadi b'makom Chaf. Okay, we can work this out, but we'll assume this. So I've also, just to summarize, Abaye is really in a sense telling us that it can't be that the Torah would tell you to destroy the chametz on the first day of Yontif, because then you'd violate Shivas Yomim Soli Motzivatechem. It must be on Erev Yontif, and then the Achilek splits the day into half. The Bei Rav Yishmol Tanu Matzinu Yedalet Shenikra Rishon Shenema Barishon Barbas Yom LaChodesh. And then the end of the pasuk says, "Ba'erev tochlu matzos." So we already have a precedent that the word Rishon is referring to the 14th of Nisan. And the advantage of the Bei Rav Yishmael over what's going to come down the line here, the name of Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, is that Rav Yishmael found a pasuk in the parsha of matzah, of Pesach, and in this very parsha, the Torah uses the word Rishon to refer to the 14th of Nisan. So he makes the following equation, that just like with regard to Pesach, and in this case the mitzvah of eating matzah, the Torah calls for the 14th Rishon, right? The Torah could have just said, B'arbas or Yom LaChodesh B'arav Tochlu Matzah. Why it says B'Rishon? So that extra word Rishon is telling me something about the word Rishon, that Rishon means Arbasar. And therefore, when it says in the pasuk "Bayom Rishon Tash Bisu Sar Min Bateichem," that you're not allowed to have ownership over your chametz, you have to destroy it on Yom Rishon. The Yom Rishon is a reference to Yudalid Benisan. Now, again, you don't know what time on Yudalid Benisan. So even Rabbi Shmuel is going to have to come back to Achilek. Do you follow me? Because again, Rabbi Shmuel is telling me that the word Rishon refers to Yudalit. Okay, Shkoya, but what part of Yudalit? Is it the midday on Yudalit? Is it the daybreak of Yudalit? Is it the night going into Yudalit, the entire Yudalit? So eventually, Rabbi Shmuel is going to also have to introduce Achilek. But he avoids this whole approach of Abaye, that they're two psukim and we have to reconcile them. And the Gemara wanted to say, maybe I need the other pasuk for a different reason, and there's no contradiction in the psukim. All that Rabbi Shmuel will circumvent.
Rishon doesn't mean the first month. Not Rishon, the first month, Barabasar.
Right. It could be Alpi Pshuta Shalmikra does, but Rabbi Shmuel is saying that we use it as a positive phrase, but Rishon Kama Bi Arbasar, that Rishon is our boss.
But the problem of Erev is already Tetvav. It's not the same day.
So it's very interesting. The Torah is saying Bar Rishon, referring to the Erev going in. So one could argue, according to Rabbi Shmuel, that maybe we should get rid of our chametz already. It works like that. You're right. Rabbi Shmuel is cutting the pasuk into half, right? Because the truth is that the Arbasar here is referring to the night after the Arbasar. And we wanted to refer to Arbasar by day. So you're going to have to cut the pasuk into half. You're going to say the following, Bar Rishon, And what does Rishon refer to? Bar Basar. And then if you ask me, when do you have a mitzvah of eating matzah? That's Bar Erev. Meaning the evening after our Basar. Okay, now we get to the most complicated drasha in this sugya, and that's Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak Omar Rishon Demeikara Mashma. That the word Rishon means before. It doesn't mean the first, but rather it means before. In Hebrew, it means Kodem. Kodem means it's before. So it does. So on the one hand, the Torah says that during the 7 days of Pesach you have to eat matzah, you're not allowed to eat chametz. And then it says, Ach bayom harishon, on the day before the Shivas Yomim, the day prior to the Shivas Yomim, is Tashbisu Siyar Mibatech, get rid of your chametz. Where does Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak find a precedent in Tanakh that the word Rishon means Kodem? It doesn't mean the first, but rather means the one before. The Omar Kra, Poskin Eov, this is when Eliphaz, one of his good buddies, Eov's good buddies, gives him a what we call a shtarka musashmuz, and he says to him, Harishon Adam Tivoled? You know, you think you're such a genius, you understand the universe, the secret to the universe. Were you born before Adam Harishon? So the word Harishon refers to not the first, but the one before. In other words, you were born before Adam? Is that that's what you give yourself credit for? You think you understand the secrets of the universe? Oh, now the Gemara is going to go on a rampage, so to speak, an onslaught against Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, and it's going to show us over and over again that the word Rishon means the first day of Yontif. It doesn't mean prior to. El Miato, if you're right, Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, Ulekachtem Lachem Biyom HaRishon, this is the mitzvah of Priyetz Hadar, etc., the Dalid Minim. And there also it says, Bayom HaRishon, is Hachinami, this is a rhetorical question, Rishon Debeikara Mashma, it means on Erev Sukkot, on the 14th of Tishrei, I'm going to have to take the four Minim? That's ridiculous. There's no question in anyone's mind that the obligation to take the four Minim is on the first day of the 7 days of the Chag. It doesn't mean the day before the 7 days of the Chag. So the Gemara tries to defend Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. And it's a pretty weak defense. The Gemara says, Shani Hosam, Dechsiv, in the Pasuk, it says, Usmachtem Lifnei Hashem Elokechem Shivas Yomim. The Torah says that you have to be in a state of joy for 7 days. Mashvi, Shvi Lachag. We know that when it says 7 days, it means the seventh day is included. Af Rishon, so too in the beginning part of the Pasuk that says, Ach Bayom HaRishon, I'm sorry, that says, Lekachem Lachem Biyom HaRishon, there too, it means Rishon Lachag. So just like Shvi, in the next pasuk refers to the seventh day within the framework of the seventh day of the 7 days of the Chag. So too the word Rishon with regard to the mitzvah of Lekachtem also is within the framework of the 7 days. So wait a second, if you're telling me that wherever it says Shivas Yomim, sheds a light on the word Rishon, to tell you that Rishon is within the 7 days, is Hachinam even by Pesach. Ksiv, it says, Ach Bayom HaRishon Tashbisu, and then it says, Shivas Yomim Matzos Tochelu. So in the same Pasuk, the Torah indicates that we're working within the framework of the 7 days, right? The seventh day of Pesach is also part of the 7 day package deal of Mitzvahs Matzah, and therefore Rishon would also have to be within the package, within the framework of the 7 days. So the Gemara says, "Imkay nichtov kra rishon har rishon lamali." There's an extra letter hey. It could have said "ach biyom rishon tish ach biyom rishon tashbisu siyar mibateicha." Why does it say har rishon? The har rishon is telling me that the word rishon here should be reinterpreted. Har rishon. It's the unique kind of interpretation of the word rishon. And the word Rishon, now in the light of the extra hay, should be should be made kara mashma, should be before the rishon. Ihachi hasam nami. Let's go back to the mitzvah of lulav. The Torah says ulakatem lachem biyom harishon is lovely. According to your logic, Rav Nachman Yosef Hay tells me that's got to be Meikara, it has to be the day before. So again, we're back to square one with Lulav. Then Lulav should have to be taken on the 14th of Tishrei because it says Harishon. Okay. So now, at this point, Rabosai, let's put in the scorecard question number one. And that is, how do we differentiate between Biyom HaRishon Tashbisu in the case of Chametz and Ulakatam Lachem Biyom HaRishon in the case of Lula? That's question number one. Now we're going to get to question number two and finally question number three. And in question number two, we're going to find another Biyom HaRishon that's also going to be clearly indicative of the first day of the Chag. Visu, and furthermore, Hasab. Now we're talking about Sukkos, but not the mitzvah of the Dal Minim of Sukkos, but rather the mitzvah of what's called Shvisa Mimalacha B'chag HaSukkos, the Chsiv, Bayom HaRishon Shabboson of Yom HaShmini Shabboson, that from the 8 days of Sukkos, we're counting now Shmini Atzeres as well, there are only 2 days that the Torah singles out as Shabboson. Shabboson means to abstain from Malacha. And that's the first day of Sukkos and the 8th day of Sukkos. And here also it says, Bayom HaRishon, this is going to be question number two, is Amar, should we say Rishon to make Karo Mashma? That already I have an Issur Malacha on Erev Sukkos. And if you'll tell me, Shaini Hasam Diyomakra Ubayom HaShmini Shabbason, Mashmini Shmini Dechagaf Rishon Rishon Dechag, if you'll answer well, we'll make that same equation as we did before, that from the Yom HaShmini it means within the framework of the 8 days, so too Biyom HaRishon means within the framework of the 8 days and not Erev Sukkos but HaRishon Lovely. After all, we had the same problem before with regard to Tashbisu, because there too the Torah mentioned Shivas Yomim, but we said the extra hay of HaRishon is going to teach me that it's Kedima, it means the day before the Yom HaRishon. So Gemara suggests maybe in the case of Sukkos I need the extra hay. Why? Hay is a mute, right? Only the first day and not another day. Lema'ute cholo shel moed. That we need the hay to teach me that on the days of Cholo Shel Moed, even though those are days of Simcha, those are days of Karbonos, but nevertheless they lack the element of Iser Malacha, and that's derived from the word hay, from the extra hay of Har Rishon. So Gemara says, no, I don't need an extra hay to exclude Cholo Shel Moed, because Cholo Shel Moed can be derived or excluded from the Rishon Ushmini Nafka, that the Torah says that the Issur Malach is on the first and on the 8th day. Now, Itzrich, the Gemara says, I still don't know about the status of Chol HaMoed. Salka Daitach Amina, I would think, Ho'il Kosrachmanu Bayom HaShmini with an extra Vav. That's called Vav Mosef Halinyan Rishon, which means that the 8th day is a tag on to the 7 days. That all the 7 days that came before the 8th day have the same status as the 8th day, Da'afilu b'chol shel moed. And therefore it means that all 7 days have an Isur of Chol HaMoed. Is Kamashmo, and therefore I need the hay of HaRishon to exclude Isur Malach in the case of Chol HaMoed. So Gemara is not happy with that either. V'lo lichto rachmona lo vav, meaning don't add the vav of Ubayom HaShmini. And therefore lo, hey, I don't need the hay of HaRishon as an exclusion. So you can't tell me now that there was a real serious Habamina here, that the Torah, in a sense, deliberately misled us to draw the conclusion that there's an Issur Malacha on Chol Shel Moed by using the Vav and then add the hay to exclude Chol Shel Moed. That doesn't make any bit of sense. You know, you add a Vav to confuse us, and then you add a hay to set the record straight. Just drop both the Vav and the hay. And therefore, the Gemara again goes back to its original premise that HaRishon here refers to the first day of Sukkos, and even despite the hay, we're not going to say that the hay comes to exclude Chol HaMoed. So then, according to you, Rav Nachbar Yitzchak, in given your premises, your principles of drush, of derivations, then harishon, in the case of shvus, of sukkahs, by yom harishon should mean the day before sukkahs, v'suin. Oh. So now we have question number two. So let's just review the two questions. We're about to add the third question. And the Gemara is going to try to answer all three questions with one fell swoop. So the first question was, what do we do with the mitzvah of Lekichas Dalad Minim, where it says Lekachim Lechem B'yom HaRishon? And that should imply, according to Rav Nachman, Erev Yontif. The second question was with regard to Shavuos, that it says B'yom HaRishon Shabbason, that should imply the day before Yontif is also B'Shavuos. And Vesu, and now we get to the third question, Hosam Ksiv, in the parasha of Pesach, it says Bayom Arishon Mikra Kodesh Yelachem, which refers to the Yontif and all the dinim of Yontif, is Rishon to make Kara Mashma. Should we say that Harishon means the day before Yontif? So it would mean that on Erev Pesach already I have to abstain from Malacha. So again, we have three places in which we find the contradiction to Rav Nachbar Yitzchak: Lulav, Shvisan Sukkis, and Shvisan Pesach. In all three cases, the word Harishon appears, and it doesn't mean the day before Pesach, the day before Sukkot, but rather means the first of the 7 days. How is that different from Harishon of Tashbisu, where Rav Nachbar Yitzchak insists that Harishon of Tashbisu is referring to Erev, the day before? And now the Gemara answers all three questions with one, what I call Agadata. Agadata means that, you know, sometimes when we dash in psukim and we find extra words here and there that are a little bit ambiguous, we could derive philosophical concepts. And some of those concepts reveal the end of days, what's going to happen at the time of the ultimate redemption, at the time of Mashiach. And these three psukim, all of which have harishon, that's Lulav, Shvisa the Sukkos, and Shvisa the Pesach, are all referring, or shall we say, enumerating, isolating three mitzvos that have a skula power. They have a certain inherent power to bring about the ultimate geula. Now, the ultimate geula has three parts to it. Number one is the destruction of Amalek. Number two is the building of the Beis HaMikdash. And number three is the coming of Mashiach. So let's say there'll be a Melech b'Yisrael. He's going to embark upon a program, a military campaign to destroy our enemies. Number two, we're going to build the Beis HaMikdash. And number three, Mashiach is going to come. So there are three elements in the ultimate redemption. Each one of these three elements parallel one of the three mitzvos where the Torah uses the word harishon. And those are sukkis and lulav, meaning sukkis meaning shvisan on sukkis, and lulav and shvisan pesach. Elahani shlosha rishon miboyle lichritoni debei Rabbi Yishmael. We need these three rishons in those three parashios for the drasha of Rabbi Shmuel, the Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel. Here's the drasha. V'schar sholosh rishon. As a reward for the three rishons, these three mitzvos, where the Torah says rishon, zachu l'shlosha rishon. We will merit, in the merit of these three mitzvos, we will ultimately have the three rishon. What are the three rishons? Number one is Lahakri Zaro Shal Esav. Now, I'm not sure what Zaro Shal Esav means here. The Maharsha is going to discuss this. Does it mean Amalek specifically who's Zaro Shal Esav, or does it go way beyond that? Number two, Binyan Beis HaMikdash. And number three, Shmo Shal Mashiach. Now, where do we see the word Rishon in these three elements of Geula? Lahakri Zaro Shal Esav Deksiv Vayetze HaRishon Admoni Kulo Kader Seor. So in Parashas Tolos, the Torah describes the birth of Esav, and he's described as Harishon. It's like Zerah Shavah here, that Harishon is referring to one of these three mitzvos where the Torah says Harishon. We're not sure which of the three. The Marsha is going to spend a lot of time on that, try to figure out which of the three mitzvos, whether it's Pesach, whether it's Lulav, whether it's Shvis on Sukkis, which one of those three mitzvos is going to destroy the Rishon of Zaro Shel Esav. Binyan Beis HaMikdash Tichsiv, here's a pasuk in Yirmiyah, it says, Kisei Kavod Marom Me Rishon Makom Migdashenu. So in the context of the Migdash, Yirmiyah HaNavi calls it a Rishon. And finally, Shmo Shel Mashiach, and this is a pasuk in Yishayahu HaNavi Tichsiv, Rishon Litzion Hine Hinam. It's interesting, the Sfaradim, when they refer to the head rabbi, the chief rabbi, they call him the Rishon Litzion. The original Rishon Litzion, the Pasuk in Yeshayahu, is referring to Mashiach. Maybe what the Sfaradim are saying, that we hope that our appointed Rishon Litzion will be the Mashiach. I don't know. But in any event, with regard to the mitzvah of Tashbisu, we only have the word Harishon. There's no school of power, so to speak, to bring about any geula through this Harishon of destroying chametz. And therefore, Harishon means, according to Rav Nachman Yitzchak Meikara, meaning the day before Yontif. But with regard to these three other mitzvos, where the Torah says Harishon, these Harishons are teaching us the merit or the reward that we're going to achieve for the observance, the fulfillment of these three mitzvos, and those are these three Harishons. You mean whether it's Rishon or Har Rishon?
Yeah. I mean, the whole point is Har
Rishon. Right. The Gemara now is saying that that the word Rishon doesn't necessarily indicate Kedima, that Rishon could be understood literally as the first. And the reason why in these three cases the Torah uses the word Rishon is for a totally different reason. And that reason doesn't apply to what? To Tashbisu, and therefore in Tashbisu we have the pasuk in Eov, which teaches me that Rishon means Kedima, the day before. Now, just to end the shir, I want to mention the Marsha here. The Marsha is going to try to match it up and tell us which mitzvah will be responsible for bringing about which dimension of the geula. Okay, then. So let me just very quickly read the Marsha to you. Just 1 second. Where am I? Does anybody have the Marsha here? Because I can't find it in my...
The art scroll has it in English.
The Marsha? Can you read it?
Yeah. The Marsha finds a correlation between the three mitzvot and the three rewards. For observing Pesach properly in commemoration of the redemption from Egypt, the Jews will merit redemption from the descendants of Esau who conquered them.
Okay, so let's go slowly. So again, we're talking about a hekesh here between geula and geula, meaning that the observance of Pesach is the observance of geula, redemption, and that will give us the merit for the ultimate redemption when we destroy our enemies. In the case of Zaro Shel Esav, good.
For observing Sukkot to commemorate God's protection of the Jews in the wilderness, they will merit.
Wait, slowly. They will merit. Just let me figure this out. We only have two choices. I have a 50% chance of getting this right. We will merit. Let's just think. We will merit either Binyan Beis HaMikdash or Shmo Shel Mashiach. I have a feeling this is Mashiach.
No, it's actually His divine presence in the temple.
That's going to take. I see. So he's talking about the Beis HaMikdash,
like
the Shechina,
which is about the Shechina and the Yom Kippur. That represents divine protection. And once again, Sukkis is the concept of divine protection against all the elements and our enemies and so forth and so on. That leaves us with, by process of elimination, Lulav, correct? And Lulav somehow corresponds to Mashiach. What's the connection between Lulav and Mashiach?
The joy of the mitzvot with joy, it will merit the joy of the coming of Mashiach.
The joy of Lulav.
Yeah.
Ah. But that's
okay. Includes, he says in Marsha.
In Kvulet, I don't know if there's a Kim Simcha in Lulav, yeah.
Well, he talks about this.
It's a little bit of a loose connection here.
He does
I'm not blaming Marsha, but
he does bring it to a conclusion. He says the Marsha adds that this is why the Gemara calls the third reward the name of the Mashiach.
Oh, you always say Shmo Shel Mashiach. I was also bothered by that question.
Since Midrashic literature refers to Mashiach's name as Menachem, meaning comfort, the name itself alludes to the joy that he will bring.
I see. The joy that he will bring. Okay, Rebel, so let's just make a note of where we got up to, so tomorrow we'll be able to pick this up. We are up to Rava Omar. Okay then? So Rava is going to come up with a whole new drasha. Actually, Rava's drasha is very compelling, very convincing.
The first part of the argument, we show the circus and the Pesach, the Pesach, when you take it to the first day of the how does that look? But by your relation to Shvisu, it's a little too late. If you were doing it on Pesach.
Right. So
the Harishon can't be parallel.
So Rav Nachman Yitzchak is offering an alternative, meaning this pre-Rav Nachman Yitzchak and post-Rav Nachman Yitzchak. In pre-Rav Nachman Yitzchak, you're right. You know, the thrust of the argument is, how could the Torah tell me to destroy my chametz on Pesach when the Torah says I'm not allowed to have Pesach and chametz at all in my Rishon? But now Rav Nachman Yitzchak, for whatever reason, I mean, then we have to analyze, but he wants to offer an alternative. And I don't need that. I can tell you that Rishon has to mean on Erev Pesach because of the Taich, the translation of the word Rishon. Harishon, Adam Tulai, were you born before Adam Harishon? So you see that the word Harishon means before, and if we plug that in here, Tashbisu, then Harishon means the day before. The Gemara has an oxalate with three different psukim where it says Rishon, and in all these psukim, Rishon indicates within the framework of the 7 days. And then the Gemara comes up with this drash of Rabbi Shmuel that these three are mitzvahs that have within it the potential to bring about the three elements in the Geula. Okay then?